Our next case for argument this morning is Gameda against Gonzalez. Ms. Fasciati.
May it please the court. For the record, my name is Mary Fasciati, and my client, the petitioner in this case, is Amon Teso Gameda, who has presented to this court a case involving his claim for asylum that he states was wrongfully denied him. Mr. Gameda is a native and citizen of Ethiopia of Oromo ethnicity. He contended to the immigration court and on appeal to the board that he was entitled to obtain, or I should say, was eligible for asylum based on two incidences of past persecution and based on a record that overwhelmingly showed that the Ethiopian government was engaging in a pattern and practice of rounding up persons, Oromos, suspected, whom it suspected, without justification in most instances, of being OLF sympathizers. The two acts that are involved as evidence of his past persecution involved a beating that he sustained while a student at the university in 1992. What is relevant about 1992? In 1992, Ethiopia held the first free elections after the downfall of the Mengistu regime. Because the government that had been formed after Mengistu fled Ethiopia was a coalition government consisting of not only the OLF, but any number of acronymic group political groups, the free elections that were supposedly supposed to have taken place should have included a slate of candidates from all these various groups. The OLF, however, whose members were persecuted and beaten in the pre-election campaign, withdrew from the coalition, refused to participate in the June 1992 election, and stated that it was an enemy of the coalition government.
Ms. Fasciati, that's all well and good, but I wanted to first clarify what it is we're reviewing, because as I see this, the BIA, at least by BIA standards, was practically garrulous in its order. It actually goes on for three whole paragraphs, and it touches all the bases. It addresses the question for the motion to remand. And then in the final paragraph, which runs, again, by their standards for quite a while, it seems to assume that these various things happened to him and to hold, and then it clearly holds, the 1992 incident does not rise to the level of persecution, I'm quoting, and then also that his government career later return undermine his claim, and they reject his claim on the merits. So it seems to me the only issue before us really is assuming everything that he said happened exactly as he says it happened. Is this, under cases of this court like Dandan and other cases, something that warrants the label persecution? Or is this, in fact, although certainly nothing anybody would want to undergo, is this less than persecution? And more particularly, is the evidence so clear that we're compelled to find that the board couldn't characterize it as less than persecution?
There are two problems with the board's analysis, as is with the IJ's analysis.
But that we're not review. I think
I understand.
You can tell me why I'm wrong, but it seems to me the IJ, in this instance, the board has stepped in and done what it's supposed to do.
The problem in this case is that all the decisions made by the fact finders and adjudicators focused on his individualized fear of persecution, the individual experiences that he sustained, rather than on the entire group persecution and pattern of practice of persecution.
But was that clearly presented to the board?
It certainly was. It certainly was. It's inherent in his entire claim.
I thought his appeal to the board focused on the credibility issues, which the board gives him the benefit of the doubt on. And you know the question whether this was persecution, and at least the government argues that he did not properly present the ethnicity, kind of the group persecution claim.
The problem with the credibility issue and what was argued to the board by Mr. Chadwick was the fact that he got, quote unquote, suckered into the credibility problem by virtue of the fact that the judge discounted everything about his factual claim of past persecution, from which he concluded that he hadn't submitted enough evidence to show that he was entitled to asylum or withholding. And because of that credibility finding, Mr. Chadwick argued very strenuously on all levels that his claim of being an Oromo, an ethnic Oromo, a supporter of, a sympathizer to the OLF, made him just as vulnerable as everybody else who was being rounded up. And Mr. Chadwick submitted enormous evidence, pages and pages and pages of evidence from various sources showing that the government, beginning in 1992 all the way to 2001, had engaged in increasingly higher persecution and pattern and practices of persecution of the Oromos. And why was that? First, in 1992, the OLF withdrew from the government with and made itself an enemy of the coalition government. Next thing that the OLF did, which was really unpleasant to the government, was that it supported the Eritreans in the Ethiopian-Eritrean War from 1998 to 2000. So, as you can see, there are very important timelines in both the country conditions as they evolved once the coalition government took hold, and his own fear of persecution. And those acts in 2001 and in 1992 tracked to specific political situations that occurred as the government began increasingly viewing the OLF not only as an opponent, but also as a terrorist organization. And by that very fact, it was rounding up persons whom you could never believe might be OLF members or violent terrorists or anything else, and detaining them, raping young children in an effort to stifle protest, in an effort to preclude freedom of association, in an effort to make life miserable, terrifying for Oromos, as was the case with this petitioner. And as he said, in 1998, realizing with the outbreak of the war that the OLF had taken an unpopular position as to which side it wanted to prevail, he knew that his time was up. And that's how he was able to leave Ethiopia and obtain a master's degree, a rather innocent way of dealing with the situation, and certainly not spectacular by any account of persecution. Nothing really wild, nothing really compelling, nothing that would grab this court. But again, individually, giving an individualized assessment of a person's claim of persecution is a far different matter than looking at it as a group persecution. And he didn't have to show the kind of spectacular fact situation that we see in Dandan or in Tolosa. What he had to show was that he faced and had a legitimate fear of being just as much at risk as anybody else if he returns to Ethiopia at this time. The board sidestepped the entire issue of credibility, which was unanticipated by Mr. Chadwick, because had Mr. Chadwick not indulged the issue of credibility to the extent which he did, perhaps there would have been enough evidence that the board reviewed in this case, if it did in fact read any of the documentation, to show that there was a corroboration of all of the accounts that this petitioner set forth as a predicate of his claim. And even though he did not sustain torture, beatings, rapings, or anything else, starvation and prolonged detention, he nevertheless is part of an identifiable group based on ethnicity and based on political opinion that the government has been and probably will always persecute systematically. It cannot be said that the Oromos as a group constitute a majority of the population, and yet they are a minority in the political process and have been systematically excluded for one reason or another. That, I contend, Your Honor, is an error of law. And it is also a subterfuge, a pretext to view the claim solely in the context of an individualized claim of persecution so that you can completely disregard corroborative evidence of country conditions that would establish a pattern in practice to make this person, this petitioner, more credible and more sustainable in terms of his application. The board did not discuss credibility, so apparently we can't review the IJ's decision. But it concluded factually from the inferences that the judge drew after the judge found that his claim was exaggerated, not believable. For example, the fact that he was able to graduate from the university, that is a sign that he wasn't persecuted. I don't believe that that's the only criterion you can possibly use. The fact that he was employed by the government, That means he wasn't persecuted.
The question is not whether that's the only criterion one can use, but whether the board's decision is supported by substantial evidence. And why doesn't his education and government job provide substantial evidence for the proposition that the Ethiopian government did not have it in for him?
The fact of the matter is that the Ethiopian government, on a whim, arrested doctors, lawyers, government officials, and he was just lucky. He was just lucky not to be detained for prolonged periods of time.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, counsel. Mr. Elke.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Stephen Elke. I'm an assistant with the Western District of Wisconsin. We were not counsel below. We do believe, as set forth in our brief, as Judge Wood said, that the proper review in this case is of the board decision. The board decision in this case uses the word affirm, which they obviously did affirm the IJ decision, but they do go on and engage in an analysis of their own and cite specifically to the record, and there is substantial evidence in the record to support the decision. Conceptually, well, before I get to that, this case, as we argue in our brief, consists of one issue, and that is whether the petitioner showed past persecution. He failed to raise future persecution in his brief, and in the record at page 75, I believe, is his appeal to the board from the IJ decision, and he did not raise ethnicity or future fear of prosecution or persecution, rather, in his appeal. So those have been waived. Conceptually, this case falls into two brackets or groups, if you will. One is some direct action which was taken against him, the first being back in 1992 when he and some other students were held in a dormitory setting for up to, as he said, 15 days. He said that he and the others were beaten by the captors with their hands and with the butts of guns. There is no evidence in the record, medical evidence, but nor is there any testimony directly from the petitioner as to exactly what happened to him. So we're left with just some beating for 15 days, and although that's not to be commended, obviously, it does not rise to the level of persecution. Moreover, as the judges have noted and is fully briefed, for 7 years after he graduates in 1993, he is employed by the Ethiopian government, going out into rural areas and providing assistance for farmers. While he's doing that, he testifies that he is trying to teach people the Oromo alphabet and perhaps talking to people about the Oromo culture, but he never is a member of the OLF. He doesn't have a card. He never is carrying a weapon. He says in his testimony that there are two groups of Oromos or members of the OLF, the political wing and the military wing. He is never part of the military wing, as he says himself. All the documentary evidence that has to do with Oromos seems, from my review of it, to suggest that if there is any, and again, we don't believe this really bears on this case because it was waived, but if the court is inclined to look at his being an Oromo, the government is bearing down, if you will, on the military wing of the OLF or people who are engaging in uprisings or being more violent.
Now, the military wing of the OLF is characterized as a terrorist organization in Ethiopia, isn't it? But our government does not so characterize them?
As it stands today, Your Honor, I quite frankly don't know what the State Department's position is. It's not in the record.
It's very easy to tell the State Department's position. In fact, I've got it on my screen here. They are not on the list.
Okay.
That's what I thought, last I had checked. And so, but one could imagine him being cautious about saying, you know, I'm with the troublesome wing, to put it mildly.
That's true, Your Honor. I could imagine a person who is of Oromo descent being cautious, but much of his argument in terms of suspicion from the government is a tautological argument. He'll say, for example, that he went to Ireland and there were three Oromo students there and then other Ethiopian students. He never said to anyone that he was an OLF supporter. They just know. Why do they know? Because he's an Oromo. Likewise, in 1998, a person who he says was a contact of his in the OLF was detained, and they took him to a place called Ambo, A-M-B-O. And he is scared but nothing ever happens to him. He's still in the country for 2 years. So every time it gets down to details as to why he would be singled out by the government, it's nothing more than a speculation or a fear or a suspicion based on his being a Romo. And that's just not enough. He admits specifically that there is no evidence at page 128 and 129. Question, did the government ever find out about your contacts with the OLF? Answer, not directly. Again, at record page.
What about the testimony that the brothers being detained and, you know, harm to his family back in Ethiopia? It seems to me he did have some indication that they knew that there was a connection. This is where, I guess, the immigration judge was skeptical that the transfers of money could have been traced directly to him. But if we're going to take him as credible, then I suppose we take that fact, too. So what do you do with the brothers being detained?
Well, first of all, I think that would bear on fear of future persecution, which our position is he waived that. But in terms of the evidence in the record, taking it that they were detained, it's again his suspicion or hunch that this is the reason is not specifically clear in the record. Based on my review and review of everything, Your Honor, exactly why it was that they were detained. So there's a silence, there's a gap there as to the why of why they were detained. Again, in the record, though, at page 150, in response to a question, he says, it's only a mere suspicion. They, meaning the government, have no evidence to prove that I am connected with OLF. So in summary, the only question before the court is whether the board properly reached its decision, and there is substantial evidence in the record to support their finding that he was not persecuted based on these two prior incidents. The one in 1992, he comes back for 7 years, is employed. In the latter one, in 1998, he testified that after that contact I had mentioned had been detained, he was nervous and that for a period of time he was using all his means he could to get out of the country. This is at page 131 in the record. And he finally gets out in 2000 to go to Ireland. He's using all of his means, he says, to get out of the country, and yet he returns in June of 2001 to finish up the work he was doing for his degree. And that supports the board's decision that the fear of persecution or whether he had been persecuted is undercut by his actions. And so we would ask that the board's decision in this case be affirmed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.